This is The Topic is Trek, episode 77 for Friday, October 16th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, she's back. We go to the future, 2027 to be precise. Someone gets the ultimate reboot. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. TNG. It stands for Those New Guys.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already.
Well, hello, 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 everyone. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek. Welcome you back to another fantastic episode. I know that because the future and all that stuff, it's very complicated. But I'm also in a very good mood today because I found out that there's a person whose name is Kevin Shattenkirk. He happens to be a hockey player, but much to the delight of many people on Twitter, I've just discovered that name. And here to rejoice in that name with me, first of all, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
How you doing?
No. I mean, I'm doing fine, but that's no. Keep working on it. Keep working at it.
All right. Can I give him one of these every time?
Hey, I love it when a plan comes together.
I'm not sure where that voice came from, but I think it's our other co-host, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I'll have the decaf rectigino. Thanks, Quark.
Is there such a thing as decaf rectigino?
There is now.
Oh, I see. If I can sell it, there is now.
We'll say if there's money involved. Yes.
Well, I was saying that it was a very happy day when we found out about, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk, but also very recently, it was also Patrick Stewart's end of the line doing his sonnet a day. So no more sonnets from
you. Sir read Patrick. Them all?
Read them all. Every single one of them. And he can't get old Bill to write any more at the moment. So, you know.
Maybe he should reboot the series and start over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Read them in a different voice. I'll be X this time instead of that's not gonna happen. Mm. All right. But we have a lot to cover in this episode. We're going to have our subspace chatter. We're also going to be talking about the last two episodes of season one of Lower Decks. And of course, we'll have our Warp Speed Roundtable as well. But as I said, first up, if it's okay with Charlie, we're going to open up subspace chatter.
About Charlie? That.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Thanks, Charlie. Your two cents is well noted, but we're going to do it anyway. And we're going to start off with Chuck telling us a very pleasant story.
In a full year of we didn't see that one coming. Well, last week's virtual New York Comic Con delivered a new twist. At the conclusion of the Star Trek Megaverse panel, Trek executive producer Alex Kurtzman was joined by Star Trek Prodigy creators and showrunners Kevin and Dan Hageman. Kurtzman then announced that Kate Mulgrew was going to be returning to the Star Trek franchise as Captain Catherine Janeway on the new animated series. Before she was introduced, Kurtzman poked a bit at those who resisted the idea of a female Trek captain back in 1995 by saying, "This captain was asked to embody the inhuman level of perfection in order to be accepted as good enough to the doubters, but showed them all what it means to be truly outstanding. We can think of no better captain to inspire the next generation of dreamers than this one." Mulgrew said she initially had doubts about returning, commenting on the 7 years she had spent inhabiting that character and the 4.5-inch high heels. I don't remember him being that high, but
okay. What? Okay.
Yeah, she had to wear heels. She's a very short woman, but she didn't want to appear, you know, standing next to Robert Beltran.
Everybody looks tall to me.
Kate, just stand up on that extra step over by Harry.
That's right.
But the idea of inspiring a generation younger than Trek had ever tried to reach was too good to pass up. Star Trek Prodigy will be targeting children ages 5 to 15 years.
So, no, that does not sound like the demographic. More like 5 to infinity.
Well, I mean, they're inspiring a new generation.
Sure. Okay.
You watch it. If it's too young for you, you know, if it turns out more like Barney.
Oh, no, let's hope that's not the case. No.
Teletubbies. We're going for a younger generation.
Well, there's colors.
I don't think there's anything beneath me. How about that?
Muppet babies.
Just go with that.
There were no new plot details, unfortunately, revealed during the announcement. So the premiere is still listed as, quote, in 2021.
In the year 2000.
Well, in the year 2121.
All right, and we're going to have a recurring theme, I think, this episode about our friend Alex Kurtzman, and Craig has got the next story that involves him.
And that's just fine with me, because in an interview with the current edition of SFX Magazine, Alex Kurtzman spoke on a wide range of topics. He hinted that a fourth season of Discovery was already in some stage of production, and talked about what effect COVID was having on the various Trek CBS All Access shows. But one thing that was especially interesting that caught our eye was his comments about a realignment of a big and small screen versions of Star Trek. Really? Okay. Having done two films, I love them so much, and I really would love to see continuity and unification between these features. He's our own Spock. And on the TV side, so because I think it's what's good for Star Trek, and that can be done any number of ways, which I agree.
He elaborated on none of those ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, remember the story that was, I can't remember if we actually spoke about it, you know, where people were talking about, they thought that Paramount was actually done with the Star Trek films.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, to some degree, I was actually okay with that because we got plenty of it on the small screen. And I like episodic Star Trek, I think, a little more than, you know, big, just action pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do like those. I'd like those as well, but I'm just fine with having it on the small screen. How about y'all?
Yeah, I think it ties in with the next story. Why don't we read this one and then we can, I think,
postulate.
Yeah, we can postulate, because speaking of that very thing, in an interview with Collider, potential Star Trek IV director Noah Hawley discussed the challenges of making a huge tentpole movie in light of the current landscape. He said he didn't feel the amount of Trek content currently on TV would be the issue for a big-budget tentpole Trek film. The problem, Hawley said, was that so many theaters are closed, and it would be nearly impossible for a $100 million film to make its money back.
True.
When asked if he thought a smaller budget Trek film would be the solution, he replied, quote, I think that's possible, although what you get into with the film companies, they don't have a strong streaming play, is that they're not in the business of making a little bit of money. The only business they can be in is making lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's the tentpole business. So if you were to offer them a $20 million Star Trek movie, that could at best earn around $80, $90, or $100 million. It might not even be worth the price of admission for them. If that makes sense, I'm sure you could go to CBS All Access and say, let me make a two-hour Star Trek movie for streaming. That might be worth it. So I think that Hawley is kind of, you know, in a different way on the same page as what we were just talking about, that making Star Trek movies might start to seem to be a little irrelevant and possibly not worth it for the studio to do, because we don't really know on the other side of, you know, coming out of this, what the new normal is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've had discussions with people saying, what are theaters going to look like and how are theaters going to operate when everybody can go back to them and everybody else is, and everybody's saying, no, I'm good. I can just stay home and watch premieres on television.
Yeah. Well, you got Disney getting ready to put their next Pixar movie, excuse me, on their streaming access, and Mulan. So, you know, things like that. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed Bill and Ted on streaming.
I guess the question is, at that point, right now, I think that you view, well, here's the money that I'm budgeted for my streaming services. And then, hey, let's go out to the movies. Well, if they become the same thing, where seeing a movie really is no different than watching a streaming service, are you just as likely to spend that money as freely watching just another thing you're paying for when you already have streaming services? Like, you're not getting a different experience overall by watching this other thing.
Yeah.
That's just it, is the theaters are counting on that experience. It's a different experience to sit in a movie theater with the big sound system and people have tried to, you know, recreate that in their homes, but it's not the same. Watching something when the kids are running around or could be crying or the dog jumps on your lap, you know, that's a different experience than going to the theaters and watching that. And the fear is, if the theaters go, they're not coming back. Right. And that changes the whole business model of making movies.
Yeah. The only thing that really comes to mind for me is that the only time I really felt like I needed to go to a movie theater and see a movie. I mean, let me back up. So I watched all the Marvel movies in the theater, one after another, but I could have just simply watched those at home. Mm-hmm. Probably Endgame was a good one, but I'll tell you the event for me was like Tron when I saw it in 3D my mind went blank. What's the Pacific Rim, you know, in 3D, and those, mm-hmm. that was awesome. At the time I wouldn't have been able to do that at home. Now I got a 3D capable setup now downstairs if I want it. So I can do that. But, seeing those in the theater was more of an event for me than just going to see, you know, the next, you know, Black Widow or Wonder Woman or something.
Right.
I just watch it on streaming.
So I think we're going to have to see how this plays out over the next year or so, what it really means for movies.
Don't get me wrong. I love the Star Trek movies. They're a lot of fun, but they are a little one dimensional as far as character development. You know, when you watch TNG, you saw somebody, you know, especially Data and other people, get their moments and you get to learn them more about them and really care about them. So anyway, enough about me.
Okay. Well, we're going to change topics and talk about Alex Kurtzman with the next story by Chuck.
Yeah, that's not changing topics.
Meanwhile, elsewhere in our all Alex Kurtzman news section, the All Access Admiral was interviewed on the Hollywood Reporter Top 5 podcast. It turns out that the team at the Secret Hideout has a plan for Trek shows through at least 2027. Kurtzman was the first to say that this was not a commitment on anyone's part that everything in the plan will happen, but that they are thinking long term. They've learned something from Marvel. Yeah. Kurtzman also spoke out about production in the age of COVID, how Discovery has many years worth of story left, and much more. It's well worth the listen. You can find our link by going to episode 77 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Now, we're going to shift gears and not talk about anything involving Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah.
We're instead going to talk about something that doesn't exist anymore. So that's a step forward, I guess. I don't know.
Should have worn my shirt for this one.
Indeed. Yeah.
Well, you know, we all miss the Star Trek the experience. We all had a good time there, right, guys?
Indeed, we did.
Yay.
Yeah, but we all thought that we had seen.
I'm pour one out, and it's just going to make a mess in here. So
that's right. I don't have a cup. I'm just going to pour it out. But we all thought that the footage we were going to see from that attraction has always been out there and gone. But we were wrong. YouTuber Dave DeVos found a 28 minutes worth of rare video of the final stages of attractions construction in 97.
Cool.
The video shows work being done on sound effects, construction of Quark's bar, and the Museum of the Future. There's even an inspection walkthrough by some of the executives. But for us, the coolest thing about the video is the mechanism used to unexpectedly transport the unsuspecting guests from current day Vegas to the 24th century and the U.S. Enterprise D. And it's just as impressive when you see it, how it was done from every angle. And I wish I'd gone and seen this video before.
It's amazing because, I mean, you guys have seen.
We did the backstage tour. Yeah. Right. And they showed us. Yep.
So it's interesting here, though. I don't know whether you had the same experience, but because they're still working, all the lights are on everywhere.
Yep.
And you just see kind of the bare bones of everything. And you watch that center room lift straight up and then immediately come sliding over the false transporter ceiling. And then you see it reset slowly again. And then they run it a couple of times, then they're inside of it and you get to see what it's looking like inside with all the lights on, and pretty much every way you can look at that thing going through it. It's still impressive to see how they move that mass that quick.
Oh yeah.
Which is where you get that whoosh.
Big old counterweights.
So I encourage everyone to check it out. I mean, it's not narrated. It's just raw footage. So you can hear voices sometimes and sometimes not, but it really is a fascinating look at just talking about behind the scenes before the thing was ever even done.
Yeah. I want to go see that.
Craig, don't we have our video out there still on the Technorama channel, or is it on yours?
Yeah. That's just what I was going to say. Yeah. It's out. We got our video out there. I'll put a link to that in the show.
Okay, good.
And we have April Abert. She was explaining it to us. You can kind of see it. Now, this is before I had any high def equipment at all.
Yeah.
So it's not, I wouldn't say the quality is great because, one, it's SD, but two, you know, it's kind of dark. But you can kind of get an idea. You can kind of see as she's explaining how it works. You know, it works while we're standing in it, and it, which was kind of cool. So, we got a lot of behind the scenes stuff. You can see what was fascinating to me was when we were under the shuttlecraft, and you can see it on the gimbals, and it was all moving around, and that was fantastic.
And it was running Windows 3.1.
Yeah, pretty much.
And
the parabolic screen in front of it, it was kind of huge in itself in front of the shuttle. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. And finally, speaking of Vegas, the annual Star Trek Las Vegas convention, which had previously been rescheduled from early August, where it normally existed, to early December of this year, is again shifting dates. This time to August 11th through 15, 2021. Naturally, this is because of the current worldwide health situation. But there's another twist. It seems that the contract Creation Conventions has with CBS to be the official showrunner of the event will run out at the end of 2020. Next year's convention will simply be named, quote, 55-year mission Las Vegas.
What? I'm not sure a lot of people are going to sign up for that.
Headliners will still include William Shatner and will be joined by dozens of Star Trek actors and behind-the-scenes talent. The event will still take place at the Rio Hotel in Vegas, but there's no word yet on who CBS will select as the new official Star Trek convention event organizer. And I've got to believe that they will have another one because, I mean, I can't think that that's not a moneymaker for, you know, all involved having that annual convention.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I keep forgetting when it is. I've got to mark it on my calendar so that we can plan on that, because that's about the time of year when my boss is saying, be sure to take your holiday time before things get crazy again. Like when
is that?
Yeah. When are things not crazy at work, but they always
February of 2020.
This year, the big question was like, sure, I'd take a vacation if I had somewhere to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the conversation you had in February of 2020. Hey, take some time off before things get crazy.
Well, our problem is that it's fairly close to Dragon Con. So
it is, But, yeah, you know, for me, it's just a drive up the road. We could spend a quick weekend, or the 11th through the 15th. I don't know what date that is. Sounds like it's a Monday through Friday thing, but I'm sure. Or maybe it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, we can stay in the guest house. There we go.
Yeah, we can go. We have to stay in the guest house. And, well, wait a minute.
Lisa and Grantis won't mind.
Yeah, we might be sleeping around the pool at the moment.
Oh, well. I get the diving board. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense.
No, we took the diving board out.
And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, while there is no new Star Trek news out of Vulcan, we do note that the expansion of the Vulcan Community Health Center is now open.
Oh, good.
With reports of a second wave of COVID reaching Alberta, we're glad to see that the people of Vulcan are taking care of each other and stay safe. Guys,
oh wait, you're a red blood. You got to go to the hospital across town.
Oh yeah, it's just for green blooded. Oh, I had no idea.
Live long and prosper. Yeah.
Now, we covered a bunch of stories here, mostly involving Alex Kurtzman, but there were additional, not 5, not 10, not 20, not 50, 71 stories we didn't get a chance to cover.
That's got
to
be a new record.
I think it is. Exactly, Eric. Exactly. Everything from Mike McMahon giving hints about what will happen in the next season of Lower Decks to Data being reimagined as a 90s sitcom star and more.
I saw that was great.
So you might want to check all those out. Again, it's the show notes for episode 77 over at The Topic is Trek.
There it is.
.com.
Hey, before you move on, you know, I sent you guys a video. Did you watch it? It was Star Trek Discovery as if it was Buck Rogers' intro.
Oh, I did not get a chance to look at that.
Oh, my gosh. It was great. It had the music, and it had Michael Burnham with the wing suit on, mm-hmm. At the beginning, dun, 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 and it's talking about Buck going in the future, and there's Michael falling into the – yeah, you got to watch that. That was great. If you don't have it in the show notes, I'm going to put that in here.
No, put that. I don't believe I do. With 71 stories, I lose track, but I don't think it's in there. So throw that one in. So now we'll have 72 additional stories. Look at that.
72 Rectagino on the wall. 72 Rectagino.
We don't have time for that. Matter of fact, it's time to disconnect from subspace chatter. So I'm going to say goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
Next time.
No.
Next time.
Get out.
Is he gone? Okay, good. Now it's time to go out on our main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
I can't see anything. I'm pushing colored buttons at this point. Oh, boy. We got this one. I feel like I'm in a soapbox. Push that car down the hill. All right, you get the idea. We'll stop there.
Indeed. So I mentioned up front at the top of the episode, which is how you mentioned something up front, that we'll be talking about the final two episodes of season one of Lower Decks. So that is your spoiler alert.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Wrong red button. Sorry.
There we go.
What's going on?
Our Mr. Patrick's got trying Tourette's. To creep into this segment as well. It's very, very scary.
Yeah, ship's got Tourette's.
All right. So first we're talking about Crisis Point, which first was released way back on October 1st, 2020. Remember when? Written by Ben Rogers, speaking about Buck Rogers, and directed by Bob Suarez. And a fun fact about this episode is Dr. Megalomo was voiced by Paul F. Tompkins, who co-hosts the official Star Trek podcast with Tawny Newsom, who plays Beckett Mariner. And I've decided to go with a short synopsis that I think is a bit more all-encompassing of the episode. So once again, spoiler alert, blah, 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 blah. On the short synopsis, after violating the Prime Directive, Mariner is sent to see the ship's therapist, Dr. Megalomo. He suggests she find an outlet for her rage. She does exactly that by hijacking Boimler's holodeck program and casting herself as the vengeful Vindicta in a movie of her own creation.
Yeah, right.
Crisis Point, The Rise of Vindicta. Things get very dark, but that doesn't stop Boimler from trying to find ways to suck up to Captain Freeman so he can get a spot in her advanced diplomacy workshop. By the end of the episode, Mariner has worked through a lot of issues. Tendi has made a stance as a non-piratey Orion. Rutherford has told his superior officer what he really thinks of him. And Boimler has learned a secret that practically makes him comatose. So that in a nutshell is the episode. Who wants to go first in kind of dissecting this one?
It was a bit all over the place, but I thought the lead-in was fun, right from the standpoint they went to what was the name of the planet, and she's passing out art supplies. This was another one where you gotta be watching art supplies. Yeah. Get your art supplies here. I've got
you're really helping these kids out.
The pointy pencils.
No. That's next episode. Yeah, this episode, she is freeing the lizard people.
Oh, freeing the lizard people. Yes, I'm sorry. She's always up to something at the beginning.
I was going to say, different non-cool thing going on there.
Different prime directive problem. what? Mariner? Prime directive problem? Okay. So, yeah, freeing the lizard people. Then the whole Vindicta thing was... Rather, I loved the whole movie premise because it's clearly based on Wrath of Khan. I mean, you can't get more in your face explicit than this. It was a lot of fun, even from the standpoint where the credits on the screen come zooming at you and then dissolve out, and a few of them hit Boimler in the head.
Yeah,
he's getting knocked on the head with the credits. The whole Vindicta thing was funny because it wasn't quite as planned out as she had thought. There were still a few rough edges.
Yeah.
I love how the look of everything changed. The look cinematic.
Well, you notice that they went to a different screen format while they were doing the movie portion of it. It actually went to a widescreen format.
So you had I didn't even pay attention to that.
I noticed that the view screen on the ship was ultra wide. I should have got a clue from that. That was beautiful. Well,
matter
done.
Of fact, at one point when Tendi leaves, she says, "I'm not that kind of
And all the gunk on her outfit disappears as soon as she steps out of the holodeck.
Right, and for that moment, the screen goes back to full screen because she's now stepped out of the movie.
You are very observant to catch that.
It goes back again.
wait a minute, Chuck. I'll probably give Bonnie credit for noticing those things.
Did you ever notice that happen?
Yeah. I'll write that down.
Good stuff.
I thought I'd mix these episodes up, but I went back and rewatched 9 again when they're having the great phaser battle on the ship. When you get to hell, tell the Paw Wraiths that Shaq sent you.
Yeah.
He's probably always wanted to say that and it's probably written in his personal log someplace.
I did do a freeze frame while she was reprogramming the holodeck. That phrase is on the screen. The script is there in bits and pieces. And I went, all right, I just wanted to see what was on the screen. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the line about the Paw Wraiths.
Was it really? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, she's a really, really, really fast typist. unless she had written that ahead of time and was like, had kind of stored that and she was accessing it to feed it into Boimler's program. I don't know. And I'm surprised people weren't a little bit more disturbed by the fact that Boimler bases on 7 years worth of everyone's personal logs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did an ensign get access to the personal logs?
Well, it's like Barclay did that kind of thing.
They really need they really need better security on Star Trek. I'm telling you.
Look, we want everybody to do personal logs, but we're not going to secure it. Not at all. The notepad text file.
Scott's honor that you're not going to look. Okay.
Even Facebook has a switch that says, don't share this with anybody but my friends. Gee whiz.
Yeah. Right.
I think the biggest laugh I got out of it in an episode that sometimes went extremely dark. And it was fun to find out that this was also the one thing that stood out to Mike McMahon and said, we need a bigger budget because we're going to make this even longer.
Oh, right.
Was the flyover of the Cerritos.
Oh my gosh. That was so overt. And then they get on board and it's nothing but lens flares.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. They tried to give it that cinematic over the top look, and they had lens flares. They had the whole flyby with the ship.
Even, yeah, and they're crying. Like, said that was, oh, it's beautiful.
What was it? Somebody said, well, that was gratuitous or something. Yeah.
Note to self, called the ship a handsome lady.
Yes, and this whole episode, while all this stuff is going on, all Boimler is attempting to do is just, you know, figure out how to score points with the captain.
For his review. Yeah. Or interview? What was
it? For his interview because he wanted to be in her workshop.
Oh yeah. And then he gets to the end. Captain's note. Boimler did not prepare for his spent the whole episode preparing, and then he flubbed it up.
But I don't know. What did you guys think about as you're watching it, and Mariner gets darker and dark to the point where she's, you know, wiggling Shax's jewelry
with parts
of his ear on it, saying, "You got to put this on. Got to put this on."
That was a little. It did get a little. That character got a little dark there for a bit. And I was like, wow, how does she redeem herself or come back out of this where we're not thinking there's a, you know, super bad side to her?
No, I think that was all part of the voyage, is she had to go like rock bottom to discover this at the end. She goes, oh my gosh, therapy works. You know, that was the point. It wouldn't have been as believable if she just went, you know, okay, so I shot the captain. And I'm all better now? No, that's not what she was after. That's not what the storytellers were after anyway.
Right. Yep. And you know, when you have her mission going in was to basically do harm to the captain, and she ends up fighting herself instead.
Right.
On a rickety catwalk.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, you know, it just seemed like it was getting a little too dark there. And I felt like, okay, if they go too far, nobody's going to care about this character like that anymore. And she kind of redeemed herself.
Well, that's why Tendi walked out. She's like, I'm out. You're getting too weird for me. This is
true. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rutherford is completely unaware of all of this stuff because Mr. Cyborg 5 or whatever his designation was, he goes off to tell Billups what he really thinks.
What did she say? Half man meat, half machine meat?
Yeah. All pain, 100% pain.
Right.
What's machine meat?
Oakley dokey, okie dokie. Yeah. And things go off on off the rails between Rutherford and Billups too.
You think?
Right.
And I was wondering what's going to happen with all that, because now essentially, we'll talk about this in the next episode, but I think we'll talk about it here as well, that he's not going to remember who Billups is from anybody.
Oh, that's right. Well, that, you know, maybe that opens up some new opportunities for that relationship to blossom, because he doesn't have any preconceived notions about what he should and shouldn't do, or, you know, what this, he could rediscover that person. Hadn't thought of that. Interesting.
All right. So we're going to move on to the second one, which kind of works in tandem with this because, as you know, we've been saying that this season just kept ramping up and ramping up, and said, these people are hitting their stride. You know, this seems to be getting better and better. You know, what's going to happen next? And then we have this episode, which is just a flat out riff on all the Star Trek movies. We're going, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. And then they hit us with No Small Parts, which just seemed to come out of, I'd say kind of out of no place, but when you look at it, it's pretty much a logical extension of what had been going on all season.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this first aired way back on October 8th. I got to stop doing
way back.
And it was written by Mike McMahon, of course, the show creator. Directed by Barry J. Kelly. And a fun fact, while doing a recap for this episode, show creator Mike McMahon reveals that the registry number of the Cerritos is based on his mother's phone number.
Why not?
And that he worked his sister's name into the show, and her name is Beckett Mariner McMahon.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch that.
So it might be a subtle way how he worked that name in there. You might have missed how that all worked. Mm-hmm. But all right, let's give a short synopsis of this one. I tried to make it as short as possible because a lot was going on here. But disappointed that she had to retell the Batons not to follow Landru, Captain Freeman believes that Cerritos should be following up with Legacy Cultures. Boimler accidentally lets out Mariner's secret, which drives her to try to get the transfer Boimler was seeking. Elsewhere, Tendi serves as orientation liaison for an exocomp, while Rutherford tries out previously unknown, unknown implant personality modes. But things go dark when the USS Sylvain is destroyed, trying to warp away from a powerful attacking ship, and the same is about to happen to the Cerritos. Freeman turns to Mariner to devise a half-baked solution that breaks Starfleet codes and totally pisses her off. The plan works, but Security Chief Shax is killed while the plan is being carried out. When even more Peck-led ships attack, the USS Titan comes to the rescue.
Mm-hmm.
We discover that Rutherford has lost his memory. Captain Freeman and Mariner decide to work together to follow up with Legacy Cultures, and that Boimler has accepted a position on the Titan and is indeed already on the Titan. So, a little episode we like to call No Small Parts.
Oh, okay. Who's going first on this one to tear into this one?
I'll tell you first, that opening scene, I thought it was as good as anything we've seen in the movie. You know, although there were, you know, except for, hey, I told her, take your shoes off. You know, they're got the socks and they're trying to feel the carpet on the, but when
Landru can be very convincing. Persuasive.
Yeah. Right. But when the Packlets destroyed the ship and it just kind of went, you know, and it got quiet for a minute, that was like in Star Trek 2009.
Yes.
You know, when you see all the little tiny ships going and it has a big effect because there's a big ship and there's the destruction and they're getting away. It's like, wow.
I don't think that scene was accidental, Craig.
Well, I also think that.
No. I'm just saying, no, I didn't say, no, I thought it was impactful is what I was getting at.
But I think also that it also makes sense that you're somewhat set up that the stakes are getting raised, even though it was virtually in the holodeck last week.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of preparing you that, you know, things can get a little dark and weird and it's not quite what you thought it was at the beginning.
No.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the scene that you're talking about is the one that kind of went, I think we've gone into a different area here all of a sudden of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, it's another Enterprise.
Yes, well then we find it's the Packlids, which
they're not a joke anymore.
Yeah, it's of course that's already a play on what had happened at the top of the episode where they had to do the lesson that Kirk had taught about not following Landru. So there've been no follow-up with that culture apparently since that happened.
Gee, that never happens.
and here we are. Then all of a sudden, once again, we're having it happen because we have it happening, you know, with the Packlets. Like no one ever bothered to see what was going on with them, I guess. And they think every ship is the Enterprise. I don't know.
Well, it happened with one of our favorite villains that you know of.
Yes, exactly. I'm surprised that didn't come up.
They ought to just like call that the SETI Alpha Directive or something, you know, to get him to go follow up. Isn't that kind of what the point of the Cerritos is to go follow up? Well, they're doing second contact.
Yeah, they're doing second contact. So they've, which, you know, Freeman was kind of going out of her way to say that, you know, really their orders are just to do second contact.
Okay, so why hasn't Starfleet come along and created a division that goes and does follow-ups?
And I don't know whether that's to imply that
one-on-one meetings with the.
Yeah, exactly. Let's have a sit-down confab about this. Yeah.
Can I offer some feedback on how your culture is progressing?
Yeah, we are going over your evaluation and things aren't so looking so good. No.
Look how long it took Bajor to get nominated.
I think that, you know, what they're implying is that because of the Prime Directive, that they try to stay out of the civilization's way as much as possible, but maybe sometimes that's a little too far, especially in these civilizations. I mean, in TOS era, they weren't necessarily following this to the letter. You know, you can't have any contact at all with the pre-war society, even though they do several times in the series talk about that. But when the crew gets caught up in stuff, they make themselves known about who they are rather than revealing, you know, than hiding their identity. So you have a bit of that going on, but it's still, it's kind of this first contact situation and nothing ever gets followed up on after that. So even if it's a pre-warp culture, they're just not going back and checking things out.
And
because hands off. Yeah,
and then you blink twice and it's the red hour.
Right.
You got a new scythe and, you know, where are you headed to next, you know?
Dude, there is no more red hour.
I just bought a new scythe.
Let it go. I was also wondering, given what happened in last week's episode, did we feel that Mariner was doing any buckling down this time?
I think she was kind of cutting loose a little bit because she had to.
You know, yeah, she was told to, obviously, at the end. Mm-hmm. But she seemed to, in this episode, once again, default back to, I'm going to buckle down just to get myself off the ship. Like, it's still not me. I'm going to follow all these rules because she wants what Bormler was going to have, which is the transfer to the, I forget what ship it was at that point.
It wasn't the Titan. It was...
No, it was some other ship, but...
Yep. I think it was one we never heard of before.
She's like still not really, not that I would expect her to in like the course of however short a period of time this is supposed to be like 180 degrees turned around, but she still was acting very much like other Boimler. Now we have to wait till next season to find out, okay, how much of this is taking now? How much is she really like taking this to heart that this is what she's got to do? Especially given the fact that essentially, her mother is saying, I need somebody who will kind of do things in the gray area.
Ooh, she needs her own private Section 31.
Yeah.
That's right.
So she's being encouraged to be outside of the rules at that point.
Yeah. So will she rebel against that?
Yeah, that's right. You can't make me not follow your rules. What?
I don't follow the rules, but I don't want to.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I got to diagram that sentence before I can get back to it.
I get to choose what rules I don't follow.
There you go.
And we haven't mentioned yet the return of one of our favorite characters. Badgie is back in the episode.
Oh my gosh, Badgie.
But he doesn't play by the rules either.
No,
he just waits for the safety protocols to be disabled.
Oh, you ready to blow this up? Well,
then he won't, what was it? He wouldn't finish loading the virus into the other.
Until they kill him.
I liked how the progress bar slowed down at the very end.
Right.
Using the internet on the ship.
I think
he even said something about it, didn't he? Rutherford said, it's slowing down at the end or something like that.
You knew that it was coming. That was just like,
I was like, please say something because that's funny.
And of course, you know, Badgie is quote unquote on the ship that gets blown up, but Badgie's not gone.
No, because he's still, I mean, you copy him onto a thumb drive and take him with you. You don't delete him from one system to the next.
That's exactly how the doctor on Voyager got around. They put him on a thumb drive and carried him.
I did not know that. That is a fun fact. Thank goodness he finally got that portable emitter that he wears as a patch.
Right.
We also, another thing that happened in this episode, when Riker and Troy come jazzing on in, see what I did there?
Yeah.
On the USS Titan. This now, it's been quasi-canon, and if you consider the Lower Decks to be canon, which seems to be the case now, this is the first canon appearance of that ship, and the ship was designed by a fan, Sean Terengai, for a contest, and this was years ago. So that the ship has appeared on book covers. It's appeared in, you know, in modifications, various games and so forth, but it's never been canon. It's been sitting there all those years as, you know, something that just lives on like beta alpha, memory.
Memory alpha. Like,
yeah, that it didn't have that cred. And
now it got
its cred right there.
I thought that Riker was portrayed just a little too young. I expected to see
pretty energetic, didn't he?
Wasn't yeah, expected to see some gray or even white in his hair, but no, he was like TNG age, you know, in his late 30s, early 40s, whatever it was. It just struck me as a little off. Maybe
what is the time frame? Doesn't this take place after it's just insurrection? After,
it's supposed to be post, isn't it? Post
TNG is what I thought it was. But pre Picard.
Look how we do our research.
I thought it was post insurrection. So that's about the time that Riker had taken off to go to the Titan.
Yeah.
Or shortly thereafter.
And he and Troy were married.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because they got married at the end of the episode.
And they have their two Horgons they carry with them.
Or in the movie.
No, they have one on the bridge.
The regular size and the little tiny one.
Nemesis. I'm sorry, not Insurrection.
That's okay.
Because they got married in a Nemesis. Yeah. And yeah.
A little worried about the Horgons on the bridge.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
And I noticed how uncomfortable the rest of the bridge crew was while they were having this conversation. Like,
gives a whole new meaning to ready room.
Oh, hey, by the way, Ransom's reaction when he was trying to suck up to Mariner.
Oh my goodness.
I'm only hard on you when I'm hard, but I'm not hard right now.
But I can be hard
if I want to.
And then he's like holding his hands down in front of him.
I wrote this line down because I wanted to, what does he say here? Do I have it? He sets his fist to stun and his kicks to kill.
The peckleds
who have boarded the ship.
Speaking of fists, in episode 9, Mariner did double fist punch. And then in episode 10, I'm pretty sure I heard Ransom do the same thing. There's a lot of double fist punching going on in these two shows.
Well, you know, you can't argue with the Shat, you know.
It's a Star Trek staple.
But they had to say it. That's the
No.
Well, it went by so fast. Did you notice it? Did you see it? They had to call it out that was happening.
That's right.
Speaking of that scene itself, of course, we have all this contraband falling down that Mariner has stored away in various places. Not only did we see a Surian brandy bottle, and other things, but we saw, so now it is also canon, apparently, that stupid Star Trek Spock space helmet.
Where did you see that? I missed that.
It's just like for a split second, the first hatch that she opens, it's in the ceiling and all the stuff falls to the floor.
Oh, with all the batleths and yeah.
Yep. It's there with the batleths.
Really?
It's right there.
Where did you get all this contraband?
Right here. I'll put a link in the chat and you can go click on it and look at it. Chat, click, link as we do this show.
Yes.
Hey, I used to have one of those as a kid, you know?
Oh, well, boy. See, you get rid of it too soon.
I had it. I mean, I thought it was kind of neat, but at the same time, didn't have anything to do with Star Trek except for it had, you know, the stickers on it.
I can't remember what that was not part of the series they had on Netflix about the toys, was it? Because
it did. Yeah. When they talked about the Star Trek, because that was
it was some other thing that just kind of got slapped Spock on it to make it Trek. Right.
But, they were talking about a lot of the Star Trek toys that Star Trek never got it right. Really with toys. And they would sticker slap things. So this was like something that, another toy company made, or it was just manufactured somewhere, and they just put Star Trek stickers with it. And I put a link in the chat for you guys to see. The second link is a link to the, or maybe it's not directly to it, but anyway, you can find a picture of it, and you'll see where it says like a Starfleet picture on the thing. And there, I think it says Spock or something.
Yep, it says Spock. I don't think the one, it was kind of partially buried in the bunch of stuff.
Oh, they picked it up.
Yeah, he picks it up.
Oh, did he pick it up?
He picked it up.
But you know, they don't have the stickers on it.
It wasn't
but
real detail.
The same thing.
If any show is going to make a joke thing canon, this is the perfect opportunity.
Yep.
Because Lower Decks is all about that. Hey, look what we found.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, here you go. Here's a better link. There you go.
We're gonna have to watch closely and see what else falls out of that ceiling.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing that fell out.
The Batleth
was a fencing foil.
Yeah.
And that's the thing Boimler picks up to, like, you know, try to fence with the Packleds as they're attacking him. I thought, that's an interesting choice. So you got a Batleth there and you got this other weapons there. I don't know. Even the helmet might be better protection than, you know, a fencing foil. Really?
Work for Sulu.
I suppose that's true.
Oh, wait. You didn't even. Did you bring it up that we saw Kirk and Spock in this episode?
No, I have that as a point here, but yes, I thought it was perfect. How do you portray Kirk and Spock in an animated series? You show the animated Kirk and Spock.
That's right.
Exactly as appeared on the animated series.
Yes. Which I thought was funny. It kind of caught me off guard when I first saw it. I went, wait, what? Wasn't expecting that 100%, but
especially when it's kind of weird because people don't look like that in Lower Decks. You know, they got big round eyes and stuff, and it's you know, it's not quite right.
Yeah, well,
but it was, you know, you couldn't think of a better way to just do that. Yeah, we've talked about many times they've referenced and shown aliens from the animated series. But, you know, to just see Kirk and Spock there as well, you know, it was pretty darn cool. Okay, is there any other memorable things they want to talk about in this episode? An episode that I posted about right after it aired. And I swear there was not a single person who said, yeah, it was okay. That episode was okay. Matter of fact, Bonnie, my wife, who watches Lower Decks, but it's not quite her thing, and she's looking for something in it. She's looking for things to happen to Boimler that would justify all of the stuff that he does.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll watch it with me, and then we're watching this episode, and it went to a commercial in the middle of the episode. She says, mm-hmm. I can't believe I am really enjoying this episode.
Really? Well, good. Actually, Harrison is enjoying it. He's not finished with it more than I thought he would. He's not really into Star Trek so much, but he's enjoyed this season.
Let's see how much you enjoyed them. Shall we rate these gentlemen?
Yes.
Yep. Let's do so. That's what's coming up right now. So let's
800.
Quatlu's now suddenly we're going with.
The Quatlu exchange has really gone down.
It has.
Not good.
All right, so let's start with Crisis Point. Of course, that was the episode that was the homage to the Star Trek movies, complete with lens flare and Star Trek II music.
And all signatures of the actors at the end.
That's right, Star Trek 6.
During the movie.
Kind of everything thrown in there.
That's right.
Epic battles on catwalks. All right, rickety catwalks, by the way. So I will start with, I don't know who I started with last time. So I'll start with Craig. What do you rate Crisis Point?
I'm going to give it a 9. I think this season has consistently moved up. I really loved it. I thought this was a good episode where they, like I said, they changed the look of the animation enough where they tried to give it that cinematic effect, you know? And I don't know, the whole thing, I thought it was really cool. I thought they did a good job with it.
Okay, I will go next on this one, and I'm going to rate it an 8.5. Yeah, I would have gone higher, but I completely understand the intent of that darkness that it went to, and I don't deny them the ability to do that. I felt like it got at certain points a little freakishly dark to make that point. And although they redeemed themselves, I just felt a little uncomfortable. You know, I called out the dangling of Shax's.
You know what? Jewelry. I'm revising my, you convinced me. I'm doing an 8.5. You're right. Okay. That was something that kind of bugged me a little bit. I mentioned it, you know, but.
Like I said, I understand why they went there. Just for my personal taste, I felt it went a little much, but I.
Can I legally change my vote?
No, I'm sorry.
You already signed the envelope and sent it in. Thanks.
That's right. All right. So we'll go to Chuck.
I'm with everybody else. 8.5.
Okay.
Same reasoning, mm-hmm. You know, very good. That the, you know, I've been waiting for those moments where the show makes me laugh when no one else is around. I mean, there's definitely I find it easier to laugh when you're with somebody, mm-hmm. You know, even in a crowd, things are funnier.
Is that why we do this show? We've been podcasting together for so long.
That's why you're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes. A, we're not funny, and B, you're by yourself.
Okay, so you should have told me that 15 years ago.
I said you're not funny.
Oh, wait.
Chuck an 8.5, went a little dark there. Okay. Anyway.
those moments where I'm laughing increase throughout the season. With episode 9, there were several of them. With episode 10, I was watching on my iPad in bed and trying not to wake up Donna as I was, you know, suppressing.
Stop laughing.
Oh my God, that's funny. Because nothing funny. There are a few things that are, I should say this quietly so it doesn't carry through the house, but you know, when somebody else is watching a video and they're laughing and they go, oh my gosh, you have to see this. You know, they've already set you up for this expectation that's going to be really funny. And you look at it and go, that wasn't that funny. So I didn't want to do that to her because it would have been out of context. And, right. You know, would she know this was straight out of Star Trek 2 and all that kind of stuff? So it was, I thought episode 10 was.
Well, we're talking about 9 or 10 because you're talking about.
We already rated 9. And okay, since I went last, I transitioned into first.
Okay. Smooth move there. So now we're
talking. You didn't even know what was going on.
No small parts.
So, yeah, no small parts. I am giving it a rating of a 9. I think there's still some room to grow in terms of the show. But it had many of the elements that made me laugh. They had a lot of callbacks. Again, this is one for the Trekkies. Obviously, there are a lot of references to the pack lids and you know, TNG, and you're even examining the uniforms they're wearing. You know, it was something to absorb and definitely to watch multiple times. I'll give it a 9.
Okay, and I am going to give, I don't know, the first ever I've given, I'm giving this a 10.
Ooh.
That I feel like... Exactly, Eric.
Yeah.
I feel like this episode was its own mini movie. You know, up at that rarefied air of Best of Both Worlds Part 1, that it just kind of sucked you in with a very amusing opening and then suddenly takes this left-hand turn. And when you talk about something where everything changes, this was an episode where everything changed and yet all of it was flowing directly out of what had preceded it. And it just kept moving at a breakneck pace. And I've watched it several times, obviously a couple of times to do the notes, but I watched it a second time with Bonnie when she was having her reaction to it. So I don't think I can rate that any less than that. I also, to that point, when I posted that I really enjoyed it and people were responding, I did get at least one person who said, I am a very casual fan that really don't watch a lot of Star Trek, but I really, really, really enjoyed this episode.
It's your pointy pencil twirly things. She couldn't think of the word for compass.
Right.
All right. And Craig.
I'm going to give it a 10. I thought they nailed it, especially with the Pixar Up intro kind of thing, you know, kind of made you go, oh, you know, I think Pixar's up. The first 10 minutes was tear jerking enough. It was terrible. I mean, good, beautiful and terrible at the same time. And this had that kind of moments like, whoa, you know, they tried to get away and didn't work out. But I don't know. I thought the whole episode was well done, fast paced, and it was even paced the whole time. You know, there was something going on. Like you said, they're at the end, everything changed. So you're not sure where they're quite going to be when the next season ends up. But I think they've definitely earned it for this whole season has been really good. Especially, you know, first Star Trek season to come out strong at the first season. They have to end on a high note, and I give them a 10.
Right. All right. And that brings us to just any final thoughts on the season overall.
I'm looking forward to the next one.
Okay, that's the best thing to say about that, I would think.
Locked and loaded.
Solid.
All right. And we will undetermine when it will come out. But since it's animated, hopefully they'll be on a easier schedule than a lot of the other productions out there. So
I'm a convert. I mean, you remember when it started, I was, you know, barely able to give you a 6 on some of these going, come on, you know, it feels a little forced, you know, that I was not on board with this, but I am a convert.
Excellent. 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 All right. Well, it's time to head now to our Warp Speed round table. And this one is in honor of this last episode that we just got through talking about. And I am asking the question, what's a civilization or a situation you'd like the Cerritos to check back in on?
Alderaan.
As you know. Yes. Well, I suppose I should have said in the Trek universe.
SETI Alpha 5.
I think the Flintstones are canon.
No, this is why I can't have nice things. I'll toss out one.
Vulcan? The blown up version?
All the things that are blown up. Why are you doing this?
Maybe they should go visit Ork once in a while and see what the...
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe this is a bad idea since it's just this.
Go visit a black hole.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's time to
refill the dilithium chamber.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe they should visit the pack lids a little bit more.
Well, I think that that's a must, but I don't think it's going to be just to say, hey, fellas, hey, what's up? How you doing anymore?
Oh, we're near the Enterprise.
Yes, and send the Enterprise next time so they feel a bit better about themselves in the script ship identification.
Go back and visit the Founder's homeworld.
Well, I was thinking you want to go back to, you know, that planet where the Edo will kill you for walking on the grass and see what's going on there. You know?
Come on, let's run.
Hey. Haven't I taught you people AstroTurf? Whoa, what's wrong with you?
You know, I had a good answer to this, and I had a serious answer, if you believe it or not.
Well?
I can't remember what it was.
His brain's not wired to retain serious thoughts.
Well, Khan and his crew went through my head, but that's not what I was thinking of.
How about that culture from one of the other ones I was thinking of was the culture from Vol. Now that Vol is, because Vol is theoretically gone, but we've kind of thought Landru was all done, right?
Or how about the proto-Vulcans with OG and, you know, from Who Watches the Watchers? He said, one day you will be, you know, they've already stepped all over the Prime Directive on that one. So who knows what's happening there?
Stepped all over.
And obviously one that we would theoretically actually do another look in on was the Gamesters, not the Gamesters, the A Piece of the Action.
Oh, I kind of wanted you to say Gamesters, but yes, well, we should go back there.
We should.
Oh, let's go check in and see how... I just had another thought. Wow, that was a tangent off of a tangent. Where she mentions, you're probably just when she makes a reference to Zahn.
Oh, yes.
It's like, wow. He's like, who's Zahn? Exactly.
Exactly.
But The slime monster that killed Tasha. What was his name?
Armus?
Armus, yes. Let's go Armus, visit Armus. I want to see how he's been. Because he was really happy to see them go.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but how can you tell what he's doing? I mean, he's just kind of being this puddle. I mean, it's like, was he a puddle before? Yeah, well, he's a puddle now.
Let's go skip stones.
Stop that, you oil slick. I am not from Exxon.
I was going to say he was some variant of a changeling, but as we know from the episode with the conspiracy theorists, the changelings don't exist and the Dominion War never happened.
That's true.
He's a skin of evil.
Evil! All right.
Hey, wait a minute. You know what? I was thinking, I know Tasha, that's how Tasha died, but I think Riker got the worst part of it. He came out and he was alive and slick with us. he had to stay that way for a while.
That stuff just doesn't wash off. You know, it gets in your clothes. It gets, you know, it's like sand. It's like, you know, sand gets everywhere. Oh, no, now we're going into the franchise again.
Can we just incinerate these clothes in the warp core? You know, just get some new ones.
Let's go check out
the warp core. Is cool, man.
We should go back to one of those planets where the Borg scooped everybody up.
Ooh, yeah. Well, of course, you can't revisit them if we've never visited them. So you could explore what's going on in those places.
Wait, what's your answer, Clinton?
Well, I gave two answers. I gave the answer of Vol, and I gave the answer of the Edo.
Oh, that's true. Yep.
How about the planet where they found Data? Oh, wait, they were scooped up by the Borg too.
Yeah. It's hard. When the Borg had been there, it's kind of hard to go and, you know, check anything out.
Well, they left Data.
Maybe there's a reason.
Wait, Chuck, you had a good one. You've already answered this like years ago. Bailey. What happened to Bailey?
Yeah, we never went back and checked on Bailey when he got left with, Baylock.
The kid with Baylock.
The Wrath of Bailey. Our listeners may remember that from an earlier episode, or our really old Technorama listeners may remember.
If I have one more drink of Tranya.
You're going to punch that ball.
Get Howard on the phone. We got a voiceover for him to do season two. All right, there we go.
Let's sign him up for the reboot.
All right, but it's, as we mentioned, we're trying to refill that dilithium chamber right now. And before we warp on out of here, you can always find me, Clinton, over at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com, on Twitter and Facebook and MeWe and Instagram and the side of a milk carton. I don't know, wherever you can find me. And who speaks for you guys this week?
Go ahead, Greg.
All right. So you can find us over at Technorama, and you can find Technorama just going to Google and searching for Technorama podcast over, and you'll find it at chuckchat.com, Facebook, and all that good stuff. And we stream our show live on Sunday nights at 9:30, mostly, unless something's going on. But yes, mostly on 9:30 and Sunday.
On Facebook.
So there it is, all the time, mostly. Got it. All right.
It's reliable. You can set your watch mostly to it.
Like the atomic clock when it's broken. I don't know.
It's like the bird clock. Oh, wait, that's next week.
Yes, yes. Next week, next episode, not next week, but next episode could be a bit of a marathon because theoretically we're talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the new season of Discovery.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So everybody start doing your exercises and make sure you're in shape for that one.
Buckle up your warp core.
Indeed.
Whatever now, that means.
Don't give them away the hint.
All right. Hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't
put on
the red shirt. You put on the little helmet with the flashy light on it.
Yeah.